There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
We are continuing our sermon series on critical race theory. And some of the things that we have talked about, we've actually looked at, first of all, one of the things we've looked at is, how do we know what is true and what is not true? And first, we look at the Bible. Jesus said, if you abide in my word, you will be my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We also, when we look at history and what people tell us about history, need to realize that there are some who suppress the truth. So it's important that we listen, that we read, that we study from those who are not suppressing the truth, but those who are presenting the truth, the good, the bad, the ugly. And certainly slavery was an ugly institution, and there are other practices that we have had in this country that have been ugly as well, and we will talk about those, and we're not going to hide the truth of this. But we're also not going to paint a more dark picture than what actually happened. We have talked about the 1619 Project and how the people that pushed have been pushing the 1619 Project have been among those who are actually suppressing the truth. They know what is true. In fact, professors looked at the 1619 Project and said some of the things are not true, and they published it anyway. They didn't change anything. So we're actually going to be reading from actually original sources and from those who actually quote from original sources. And we have actually looked at that initial, and you can go back to our previous sermons on our church website, covenanttabernacle.com. Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center is our Facebook page, also on our YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle. And you'll actually see some of the previous sermons where we've shown that original slave ship that landed in Virginia, that those people weren't held as slaves. Those human beings, those 19 human beings, were actually held as indentured servants after a period of time. After they had served for a period of time, they earned their freedom and they were given land. And we actually showed in one of those previous sermons how the slavery actually was the right for one person to own another was actually won in America when one of those former slaves that was made an indentured servant that was released was actually bringing over other slaves from Africa, making them indentured servants and releasing them. When he had a lazy slave, he sued for the right to own that man. Now, this man was a black man suing to own another black man. We've actually shown that from the Bible, from history. We also showed that the second slave ship that landed in Plymouth, and that slave ship had the slaves were actually set free and were returned to their homeland, and their captors or the shipmaster and the crew were actually imprisoned by the pilgrims because 5 years earlier they had passed a law that prohibited man-stealing or kidnapping. And we also started looking last week at the founding fathers and what in their view on slavery, because many times what we see actually the majority of people in America today really don't know the truth about where the founding fathers stood and what actually happened in America. One of the things we talked about last week is that when Columbus actually discovered this new world, there were already 20 to 40% of the Indian population was already slaves. Now, what would happen is one Indian tribe would actually capture another Indian tribe, and they would actually make them slaves. And so you already had slavery going on in America, and the Indians also participated in the slavery. We also have shown from history that not all slaves were black. There were white slaves, and not all slave owners were white either. Not only was that first instance of slavery a case where a black man owned another black man, we also see that in some states, very large percentage, up to even 40% of the free people, free black men, actually owned slaves. But we're going to look further at the founding fathers on slavery. And one of the things that we'll see is that even of those who owned slaves, many of them, not all of them, obviously the people from Georgia, the people from South Carolina, where they were very prominent, they were pushing slavery and wanted slavery to happen. But many of the people, even the founding fathers that owned slaves, were opposed to this. And we started quoting from some of the founding fathers, and even showed that the Revolutionary War, and that period really brought about for the first time people actually thinking about setting someone free. And whether it is right to own a slave or not, slavery had been going on really, we saw from the Bible where Joseph was made a slave, and the slave traders or the traders that were coming by didn't have to be convinced to buy him, or they were so familiar with the institution that they knew what to pay for him, and they knew how much they could sell him for. We also saw that the entire nation of Israel, the first recorded instance of the entire enslavement or the enslavement of an entire nation was when Egypt, a nation from Africa, actually enslaved the Jews, the very young nation of Israel. So slavery was really not questioned up until the period of the Revolution. And our first U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice, John Jay, showed how the Revolution was really the first time when we have these principles, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by not that thing, as Joe Biden said, but by their creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When they started to realize, hey, wait a minute, this should apply to the slaves as well. They should be set free. And so this is really what happened. We also have looked at history and some of the letters. One letter from actually Benjamin Franklin to Dean Woodward, where he showed that in Virginia, a law had been passed previously to outlaw the slave trade. Now, notice when we talk about outlawing the slave trade, that doesn't mean necessarily emancipating the slaves. It means we're not going to allow additional slaves to be imported into our state. The King of England actually vetoed that law, would not allow it to stand, and Virginia was actually petitioning to the King of England to allow them to outlaw the slave trade. It was necessary for America, which wasn't America at that time, it was necessary for America to exist and to be a free nation in order to be able to start abolishing slavery. So we're going to actually look some more at the founding fathers today. We're also going to look at the three-fifths clause in the Constitution, which many that are promoting this critical race theory believe was actually a pro-slavery view on mankind that actually cheapened the value of human life. One of the things we'll see from history, you can actually go to the writings of James Madison, and we'll do that today. This, by the way, is freely available. Anyone can go see it. He recorded the debate that happened on the Three-Fifths Clause, and you can actually go and read it for yourself. The original document, you can see that the Founding Fathers were arguing this and why slaves were counted as three-fifths of a person in the U.S. Constitution. But further confirmation that even the Virginia founders were not responsible for slavery, but actually tried to dismantle the institution, was provided by John Quincy Adams, known as the Hellhound of Abolition, for his extensive effort against that evil. Adams explained the inconsistency of the institution of domestic slavery with the principles of the Declaration of Independence was seen and lamented by all the Southern patriots of the Revolution, by no one with deeper and more unalterable conviction than by the author of the Declaration himself, Jefferson. No charge of insincerity or hypocrisy can be laid to their charge. Never from their lips was heard one syllable or attempt to justify the institution of slavery. They universally considered it as a reproach fastened upon them by the unnatural stepmother country, Great Britain, and they saw that before the principles of the Declaration of Independence, slavery in common with every other mode of oppression was destined sooner or later to be banished from the earth. Such was the undoubting conviction of Jefferson to his dying day in the memoir of his life, written at the age of 77, he gave to his countrymen the solemn and emphatic warning that the day was not distant when they must hear and adopt the general emancipation of their slaves. While Jefferson himself had introduced a bill designed to end slavery, not all the Southern founders were opposed to slavery. According to the testimony of Virginians James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, it was the founders from North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia who most strongly favored slavery. Yet despite the support for slavery in these states, the clear majority of the founders opposed this evil. And slavery is evil. Slavery was wrong. The fact that it happened all throughout the world, the fact that we only imported a small portion of the African slaves that went to other parts of the world, the fact that slaves were actually even treated better in America than in other countries doesn't make it right. It still was evil. It still was wrong. Many of the founders who had owned slaves as British citizens released them in the years following America's separation from Great Britain. This is something you probably won't hear by those who are promoting the critical race theory, and something that you definitely won't hear from the New York Times in the 1619 Project. George Washington, John Dickinson, Caesar Rodney, William Livingston, George White, John Randolph of Roanoke, and others actually released, emancipated their slaves. Furthermore, many of the founders had never owned any slaves. For example, John Adams proclaimed, "My opinion against it, slavery, has always been known. Never in my life did I own a slave." For many of the founders, their feelings against slavery went beyond words. For example, in 1774, Benjamin Franklin and Benjamin Rush founded America's first anti-slavery society. John Jay was president of a similar society in New York. In fact, when signers of the Constitution, William Livingston, heard of the New York Society, he and New Jersey, or the governor of New Jersey, wrote them offering, "I would most ardently wish to become a member of it, the society in New York, and I can safely promise that neither my tongue nor my pen nor purse shall be wanting to promote the abolition of what to me appears to be inconsistent with humanity and Christianity. May the great and equal father of the human race, who has expressly declared his abhorrence of oppression and that he is no respecter of persons, succeed a design so laudably calculated to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke." And so you see, founding fathers actually were the ones who, for the first time, established societies and abolition societies, working to even before the founding era. We talked about that with the Pilgrims, but here in the founding era, we see the founding fathers working. Other prominent founding fathers who were members of societies for ending slavery included Richard Bassett, James Madison, James Monroe, Bushrod Washington, Charles Carroll, William Few, John Marshall, Richard Stockton, Zephaniah Swift, and many more. In fact, based in part on the effort of these founders, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts began abolishing slavery in 1780. Connecticut and Rhode Island did so in 1784, Vermont in 1786, New Hampshire in 1792, New York in 1799, and New Jersey did so in 1804. Additionally, the reason Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa all prohibited slavery was a congressional act authorized by the constitutional signer Rufus King and signed into law by President George Washington, which prohibited slavery in those territories. It is not surprising that Washington would sign such a law, for it was he who declared, "I can only say that there is not a single, not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of it, slavery." The truth is that it was the founding fathers who were responsible for planting and nurturing this first seed, that the first seeds for the recognition of black equality and the eventual end of slavery. This was a fact made clear by Richard Allen. Allen had been a slave in Pennsylvania, but was freed after he converted his master to Christianity. Allen, a close friend of Benjamin Rush and several of the founding fathers, went on to become the founder of the AME Church in America. In an early address to the people of color, he explained, "Many of the white people have been instruments in the hands of God for our good, even such as have held us captive are now pleading our cause with earnestness and zeal." Based on the clear record of the Constitutional Convention, and we actually look at the Three-Fifths Clause. Now, you may have heard about the Three-Fifths Clause. From the Constitution, it says this. This is part of Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution dealing with representatives in Congress. representatives, and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within the Union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. So, and the U.S. Supreme Court, by the way, and the Dred Scott decision took this 3/5 clause and actually exercised judicial activism to say that slavery was actually constitutional, and it because black men were counted as 3/5 of a person, and they weren't counted as a whole person. Well, here's the thing that you may not realize is that the South, those who owned slaves, wanted the slaves to be counted as one person. Now, why would they want that to happen? Well, they wanted more representatives in Congress. You see, the representation in Congress was based on the number of people that were counted. They wanted to have more representatives, which would have given them more power and would have given them the ability to preserve the institution of slavery for longer. The states in the North would have had less representation in Congress, and it would have been more difficult for them to actually abolish slavery. From the papers of James Madison in the debates in the Federal Convention, you can actually read this. You can go to Google and you can search for this and you can read it. We'll even include a link on our website for under this sermon, and also on our YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle. Our website is covenanttabernacle.com. Our Facebook page is Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. We'll include a link to the page where you can actually go and you can actually read this for yourself. But what we read is, upon what principle is it that the slaves shall be computed in the representation? Are they men? Then make them citizens and let them vote. Are they property? Why then is no other property included? The houses in the city Philadelphia are worth more than all the wretched slaves who cover the rice swamps of South Carolina. Now, he's not talking about worth and value, but he's talking about monetary, how much it actually cost for a slave versus the cost for houses. And the admission of slaves into the representation, when fairly explained, comes to this, that the inhabitants of Georgia and South Carolina who goes to the coast of Africa, and in defiance of the most sacred laws of humanity, tears away his fellow creatures from their dearest connections and damns them to the most cruel bondage, shall have more votes in a government instituted for the protection of the rights of mankind than the citizens in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, who view as with a laudable horror so nefarious a practice. So in other words, the southern states, they wanted slaves to be counted as one. Now, that doesn't mean that slaves would be free, that slaves would be able to vote. Obviously, if slaves would be able to vote and would be free, the southern states would have opposed that. But they wanted more representation, and more representation would have made it more difficult to end the institution of slavery. Northern states wanted slaves to be counted as zero, not because they didn't believe that slaves were not free, but because they actually wanted to pass legislation that would end the slave trade, and they knew that would be much more difficult to do if the South had more representatives in Congress. So the compromise was 3/5, and Again, those slaves weren't free. They weren't able to vote. They weren't emancipated, but they did count as 3/5 of a person. And this was specifically for purpose of representation. So the South did get more representation than what they would have gotten if the slaves weren't counted. But the North didn't quite get what they wanted. They didn't have as much power as they, but they still had enough power to eventually end the slave trade. And why is this important? Well, this is important because, and you probably haven't heard this, you probably, if you have not really studied and not really seen the truth on this, you probably have heard that the Three-Fifths Clause was a pro-slavery clause. It was not a pro-slavery clause. It was a clause that was put in as a compromise. And why was the compromise made? As we mentioned last week, the colonists had already in Virginia had already sought to end the slave trade and had been denied doing so by the King of England. It was necessary for the northern states that abhorred slavery to make compromises with the southern states who loved slavery so that they could become a free nation, so that these northern states could actually abolish slavery and could end slavery in their states. And this is what started happening again after America won her freedom, after our founders fought and they shed their blood, they pledged their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor, and they started to actually set the slaves free and release them, because every man is created in God's image. We are endowed by our Creator with rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's important that you know the truth so that the truth will set you free. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Now to Him who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you faultless before the presence of His glory with exceeding joy, to God our Savior, who alone is wise, be glory and majesty, dominion and power, both now and forever. Amen.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Lord.